following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
I don't know who said it first, but it is true. In your life, you are either in a storm right now, you are coming out of a storm, or you're about to head into one. Every person in this room, at some point in your life, is going to experience a period of turmoil, confusion, and doubt that threatens to overwhelm you and makes you feel like you're drowning. These storms come in a variety of different forms. Sometimes they're literal storms. We are well familiar with that around here. Sometimes they're relational storms. They're problems with other people. Sometimes they're financial storms. Sometimes they are medical storms. Sometimes they are spiritual storms. Sometimes it's all of the above at the same time. Can I get a witness? You know, I've described it sometimes. There have been periods in my life where I felt like a ping pong ball in a hurricane. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about because you've experienced it too. In Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41, Mark shows us a story about Jesus facing a real storm. This is not an illustration. It's not an allegory. This is an actual event. And one of the ways we know that is because there's several little details in this story that smack of realism, the kind of things that only an eyewitness, like maybe Mark's mentor, the Apostle Peter, would catch and pass along. And in this story, sharing this event, Mark has a singular purpose. Now, this is not 10 steps to survive the storms in your life. Mark's purpose is to say something very important about exactly who Jesus is. But because of who Jesus is, there's also something here very important about what it means to follow him. Because following Jesus does not insulate us from the storms. Verse 35, on that day when evening came, he said to them, "Let's go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with them. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. So after describing Jesus preaching and teaching to these huge crowds that had come out to hear him, Mark depicts how Jesus instructed his closest followers, that original group of 12 disciples, to follow him in a particular direction. Earlier, Mark had described how Jesus used a boat as kind of a makeshift stage so that he could address this huge crowd that had gathered on the shore. And as the day grew late, Jesus, still sitting in that boat, turns to his disciples and says, "Hey, come with me. Let's go to the other side. Let's go to the other side." Now, this command is analogous to Jesus' invitation to follow him. As we're going to see Jesus say it when we get to chapter 8, in chapter 8, verse 34, Jesus said, "If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." Travel with me. Okay? Following Jesus implies a certain level of trust that he is leading you in the right direction. In the same way, getting into a boat implies a certain level of commitment required to follow Jesus. I mean, when you get into a boat with somebody, you better trust where they're taking you, right? Because you're stuck. You're in the boat. There's no getting out till you get where the boat's going. You're committed. A lot of people like to say, "Jesus, I'll follow you," but they never want to get in the boat. They want to sit in the shore and go, "Yay, Jesus!" Jesus says, "Come with me, let's go to the other side. Get in the boat with me. Let's go." Jesus tells his disciples, "Let's go to the other side." At some point, after these disciples got underway with Jesus, they encountered some rough waters. For our purposes, put aside all the extraneous details about the presence of other boats and things like that. Like I said, those details aren't essential to the story. They just let us know this is describing something that really happened. These are little details that an eyewitness would notice. The main point, the important part of the story is Jesus' boat ran into a storm. Okay? And the Sea of Galilee, which is where this is taking place, is notorious for sudden storms. I didn't take this picture, but it's a pretty good viewpoint of the Sea of Galilee. there in the northern part of Israel. It's actually a large lake. It's about 13 miles long, about 8 miles wide. And this lake is situated in a bowl there, you can see, surrounded by these mountain ridges. And what happens is the winds coming over those mountain ridges at certain times of the day collide. And as you know, when you have winds from different directions and different temperatures colliding, it can have some pretty devastating effects. And it causes turbulent winds, it causes choppy waves, it can even cause some pretty violent thunderstorms. And this storm on the Sea of Galilee, this very real storm, is a great reminder that our lives are subject to storms of a different kind. At certain times, the conditions in our lives collide to produce turbulence that threatens to overturn and overwhelm us. Sometimes now, let's be honest, those storms are the result of choices we've made. You know, we're just reaping what we've sown. Other times, those storms are the result of choices other people made, and we're just the victims. We're the collateral damage. And then there are those storms that come into our lives that are just the result of living in a broken, corrupt world surrounded by a whole bunch of broken, corrupt people. We just live in a bad neighborhood. And sometimes you're in the right place at the wrong time, and bad stuff happens, okay? No one living on planet Earth until Jesus returns and he brings the new heaven and the new earth, no one living on planet Earth is exempt from the storms. Now, it's important to say that out loud because, you know, a lot of people act surprised when the storm happens to them. I hear people cry out, you know, God, why are you letting this happen to me? I mean, I'm a good person. Things like this aren't supposed to happen to Christians, are they? Yeah. Can I remind you, where was Jesus when this particular storm came up? He's right there in that boat with his disciples. He was in the storm too. Following Jesus does not exempt us from life's storms. In fact, you want to get down right down to it, there are certain storms that become more likely because we are following Jesus. I mean, just ask some of our brothers and sisters that are in other countries, like the country I heard about this week, which has said no more religious funerals. You can only have state funerals now. In John's Gospel, in chapter 15, John relates how Jesus told his disciples, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, because of this, the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. We all know what they did to Jesus, right? That's that whole part about deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me. Let's go for a journey. In addition, we have verses like 1 Peter 5, verse 8, where Peter says, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Did you catch that? You have an enemy. He's a supernatural enemy. And he hates Jesus and everything Jesus represents. And if you're with Jesus, he hates you too. And he wants to get in and disrupt everything that is drawing people to Jesus. If you doubt it, then I tell you what, you start trying to do something in a church or in your life that will bring attention to Jesus and draw other people to him, I guarantee it won't be long before you hear the enemy growl. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Once again, following Jesus does not prevent us from facing life's storms. However, this is the good part. Following Jesus means we never face those storms alone. Storms will come. Jesus tells his followers in Matthew 5 verse 45 that just as God allows the sun to rise on both the good and the evil, he, quote, sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Okay? Jesus tells his followers in John 16, 33, in the world you'll have tribulation. That means, the actual Greek word means pressure or squeezing. You're going to have tribulation. However, when you are following Jesus, you are not facing that storm alone. The very same passage where Jesus told his followers, you're going to have tribulation, he goes on to say, but be of good courage, I've overcome the world. In Matthew 28, 20, Jesus tells his followers, look, I'm with you till the end of the age. So you're not in that storm alone. You ever been in a crowd where somebody tries to be funny and says something a little bit irreverent, and they look around and everybody else has kind of done this number and they're looking up? And so he says, "You fools, what are you looking at?" And somebody says, "Well, it's getting kind of cloudy, and after what you just said, we don't want to be standing too close to you." I'm here to tell you, when those storm clouds start to gather, you want to be standing next to Jesus. Just because Jesus' presence is not evident doesn't mean he's absent or unaware of our distress. I mean, sometimes Jesus' presence is not always evident to our awareness. We read in this story, verse 38, Jesus himself was in the stern asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?" You know, the boat's starting to swamp. Jesus is taking a nap. The disciples are bailing water like crazy. And Jesus is curled up on the bench asleep. The boats back in that day, they usually had a bench in the back where the landlubbers would sit to stay out of the way of the crew, okay? Now remember, many of Jesus' disciples had been professional fishermen. He, on the other hand, was a carpenter by trade. So he's staying out of the way, and he's probably so worn out from all the ministry and preaching and teaching he's been doing, he just curled up and took a nap. Somehow, he remained asleep during a storm that was enough to send these experienced sea hands into a panic. That's how bad this storm was. Even the professionals were getting frightened. And Jesus' disciples are so scared, when they finally remember he's there, when they wake him up, they're accusing him. "Lord, don't you care that we're perishing?" You ever been so stressed or so frightened, you looked up at God and said, "God, don't you care? Why are you doing this to me?" Come on, admit it. We've all done it. So they wake Jesus up. I think it's interesting. Jesus doesn't ask for a sit rep. He doesn't say, "What's going on?" He just stands up, looks the storm in the face, and rebukes it. Now, the Greek word here, epitomason, means literally to censure or to admonish. And this word, we've encountered it before, back in Mark chapter 1, verse 25, when Jesus was rebuking a demon that had possessed a man. Jesus told the storm also, he said, "Hush, be still." And that second command, "be still," paramosa, literally that means, get this, put a muzzle on it. He's telling the storm, put a muzzle on it. You know, we've already encountered that word as well. Guess where? That same verse back in Mark 1:25, when Jesus muzzled the demon to keep it from talking. Now, that's led some scholars to look at this story and speculate, maybe there was something a little more than natural going on with this storm here. Could it be that this was some kind of demonic attempt to derail the mission of Jesus? Now, we don't know for sure. Because on the one hand, remember, these kind of storms happen frequently in the Galilee. But then on the other hand, I have seen the enemy stir up all kinds of storms within churches. Show me a church where people are worshiping God passionately, where disciples are being made, and where the influence of Jesus is being spread in the community. And I guarantee you that before long, the enemy is going to start coming up to people and whispering in their ears and stroking bruised egos and stirring up our insecurities and stimulating resentment. And pretty soon, people are at each other's throats and they really don't know why. I've seen people, good people, do stuff and say stuff, and I sit back and scratch my head and say, "What were you thinking?" And then I look in the mirror and realize, "Dummy, you're doing the exact same thing." None of us are immune to those kind of tricks. That's why Peter says, stay sober, be alert. Don't let him get away with that kind of garbage. Now, at this point, some preachers will stand up and say, what you need to do is rebuke that demon. I don't know about you, but that's that kind of strategy worries me. You know, I'd rather turn to Jesus and keep Jesus between me and that roaring lion. You know, he's the one with the authority. Jesus, you take care of that. I'll just sit back here and cheer you on. But keep your focus on Jesus. The point is, when we're in the storm, even if we're not aware of Jesus, Jesus is aware of us. Sometimes the roar of the wind prevents us from hearing his voice. Sometimes the clouds prevent us from seeing his face. But he is present, nevertheless. And he is aware. There's a story in Genesis about a woman who found herself caught up in a little bit of a storm. Her name was Hagar, and she was the servant to Sarah, the wife of Abraham. Now, God had promised Abraham he was going to make him a great nation. One problem, Abraham and Sarah were both getting on in years, and they did not have any children. So Abraham and Sarah came up with this idea, did like we try to do sometimes. They decided they'd help God out a little bit. So Sarah badgered Abraham into sleeping with Hagar, her servant. And that was a double injustice. I mean, first of all, she's a servant. Second of all, you know, she can't say no to this. Talk about being put in a bad spot. After Hagar becomes pregnant, then this whole thing starts to unravel. Her relationship with her mistress sours. They're at each other's throats. Sarah finally says to Abraham, you got to do something about this girl. And things get so bad that Hagar actually runs away. And she is hiding out at an oasis in the wilderness. And God sends an angel to find her. And this heavenly messenger appears to her and says to her in Genesis 16:11, God has heard you. He's the God who hears. And he makes a promise to her that if she would go back to Abraham, things would eventually turn out well. And so she gives that place a name. And you know what she calls it? In Hebrew, she refers to it as Ber El Roy, which means El Roy means God who sees. So he's the God who hears, and he's the God who sees. No matter what your storm is, God knows, God hears, and God sees. And not only that, he is able to bring peace in the middle of your storm. Now, about now, you might be saying, oh, wait a minute, preacher. Hagar's story, that was God who heard and saw and acted. Here we're talking about Jesus. What's the connection? I am so glad you asked. Because look at verse 39. And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, hush, be still. And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. In demonstrating his authority over this storm, Jesus demonstrated his identity as Lord over all creation. I mean, the men in the boat that day with Jesus were Jewish. They may not have been religious scholars, but they knew their Hebrew scriptures. Their culture involved memorizing huge portions of the Hebrew scriptures. And so they knew that according to those scriptures, there's only one who can command the waves. Most likely they remembered passages like Psalm 107 verses 28 and 29, which says, they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distresses. He caused the storm to be still so that the waves of the sea were hushed. They knew that passage. They knew passages like Job 26:11 and 12, which says of the Lord, the pillars of heaven tremble and are amazed at his rebuke. He quieted the sea with his power, and by his understanding he shattered Rahab. They knew Psalm 65:7, where God is described as the one who stills the roaring of the seas, the roaring of their waves, and the tumult of the peoples. Dozens of other passages throughout the Old Testament, either explicitly or implicitly, say that ultimately God alone is the one who can command the winds and the waves. And so the disciples put two and two together, and they recognize something real quick, which is why they're so freaked out when we get to verse 41, which we're going to look at in just a moment. They understood what Jesus' ability to command that storm meant. On the one hand, they see their teacher Jesus, who like every other human being gets worn out and he needs to take a nap. On the other hand, they see that same Jesus do things that only God has the power to do. So the question was, could they accept it or not? Because you see, storms have a way of revealing how deeply we trust Jesus. Verse 41, Jesus says to them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? So he rebukes the storm, and then he rebukes his disciples. What are you guys scared of? Where's your faith? Think about this. If Jesus is God, he knew when he invited those disciples to get in the boat and go with him, they're going to wind up in a storm. He knew that storm was out there. And he said, let's go anyway. If Jesus is God, he knew that storm would not overcome them. If Jesus is God, he already knew he planned to muzzle that storm. The disciples didn't know any of this, but they did know Jesus. So the question is, did they trust Jesus enough to trust that he was in control? The storms of life have a way of testing how much we really trust Jesus. As we're told many times in the scriptures, the righteous will live by faith. A few years ago, we had my friend Dr. Joe McKeever here. And that weekend, he shared two things with us that have always stuck with me. The first thing he says is, friends, he said this over and over again when he preached that morning. Friends, if you do not have faith, you will quit. How many remember that? One or two hands up there. Yeah. If you do not have faith, you will quit. He also shared something that weekend. I've taken a calling at McKeever's Maxim, and it looks, he's a cartoonist, so he did it out like this. And it says, when God gets ready to do something great, he loves to start small, use ordinary people with any method he pleases, and takes his own good time about it. Now get this. Only people of faith will still be standing at the end to see what God has done and to behold his glory. Now that's not a verse coming out of the scripture, but the scriptures, that's where that's derived from, is verses of scripture. The just shall live by faith. The righteous ones live by faith. Without faith, it is impossible to please him, as Hebrews tells us. Do we really trust him even when the boat starts to rock? That's a question we all have to answer. Do we have enough faith to get in the boat with Jesus and to trust him to get us to the destination he has planned? Revelation of Jesus' identity forces us to reckon with the question of who he really is. In verse 41, they became very much afraid and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? So after seeing a demonstration of Jesus' power, Mark shows his disciples saying, who in the world is this guy? Because they know what they've just seen. They know what the scriptures say. And their mind is just blown right now. That question, who is this man, is actually woven deeply in all four of the gospels. Every time Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John tell us about something Jesus said or something Jesus did, that question is there in the background. Who is this man? It's a question we each have to answer. And how we answer that question could have eternal implications for our lives. Who is this one who calms the seas? Who do you say that he is today? And are you ready to get in the boat with him?
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautix.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.